Aaron, tell me a little bit about this play. Give me a synopsis of what happens in it.
Okay, in an anonymous Midwestern affluent suburb, three good kids sort of discover that they each have this talent for rapping. And one by one, they kind of come together and form a crew. The two boys, there's Hank, who's kind of a nerd, and Julian, who's all swagger. They battle in a mall parking lot, of course, you know, to see who's the deafest MC in at the new mall on Fisher Road.
Wow.
Okay. And then they realize that Hank's a great writer, Julian's great on the mic, and so they team up. Hank writes and produces, Julian delivers, but they can't quite. They don't quite hit that magic spot until little Luann, who's one of the preppy princesses of the school, kind of comes on the scene and reveals that she has this amazing talent. And not only that, but kind of knows the secret to freestyle, to improvisation, which is something that the guys don't even, like, they're not even there yet. They're not even ready yet. So she gets to kind of teach them, school them, as you might say.
Idris Goodwin wrote this. How true is this to the reality of the beginnings of hip hop and rap? Does this meet the test of nonfiction?
It does. It does. The play is set in 1988, so it's not the beginning of hip hop. It's really the brink of what music scholars kind of now define as hip hop's golden era. Which is about 1987 to roughly, it's debatable, but 1992, where hip-hop really, really hit its stride. And so what's interesting about this play is that usually when we talk about formative hip-hop coming-of-age stories, we're talking about urban coastal stories. We're talking about New York stories or Los Angeles stories. But in 1998, Yo MTV Raps came on the air, and suddenly, you know, hip hop records were also, you know, showing up in mall record stores, for example. And so, kids in the middle and the flyover states started to really become big fans of this music. And yet, it still wasn't the cultural juggernaut that hip-hop is today, especially for youth culture. So it's entirely believable that you have these three kids who really love this music, and there's enough of it, and it's really amazing in 1988. I mean, it's amazing music. But they might still feel like outsiders among their peers who aren't quite there yet, who haven't quite discovered it.
And this story then hasn't been told. This is a common story throughout the country, as a lot of these young people were trying their hand at this, some of whom may have become successful later on, but maybe many who didn't. But the story's not been told. It's not an East Coast story, not a West Coast story, so it's been forgotten.
Right. And to get personal for a second, it feels like, I mean, although I was not a rapper, it feels like my story. You know, when I was 13 years old in 1988, 1989, and discovering hip hop through my big brother, and nobody in our little school in Kentucky was listening to this music. And so I'm kind of very personally fond of this perspective because it feels familiar to me. It does feel true.
Does that fondness extend to the performance itself?
Yes, yes. The play is very well realized. The performances by the three young actors are really believable, really fantastic. They don't seem too old to be playing the parts that they're playing, which is kind of a tricky thing when you're casting adults, you know. And they don't seem like caricatures. They're good kids, you know, and they each have their own strengths and their weaknesses. And they change over the course of the play. At least the two boys really do, especially once Luann comes onto the picture. But it's not like a trite, you know, romantic entanglement or love triangle or anything. It's really about friendship and about coming into your own. And the performances really reflect that as well.
There's a DJ in the show. Talk about that.
Yes, yes. The DJ's name is Selector, and the DJ is there in the DJ booth. It's in the Bingham Theater, so we're in the round, and in one corner is the DJ booth. And the DJ is spinning during the pre-show, so you come in and you're hearing Eric B. and Rakim, you're hearing MC Light, you know, a lot of those rappers that came out with strong records that year. And then she's sort of the narrator of the show. So she pops in to stop the action and explain things for the audience. Like, you know, this is the drum machine that they're talking about. This is what really made it possible for folks who didn't have access to fancy recording studios to be able to sample and loop their own beats.
Now, that could be a bit of a clunker in the middle of the play, but does that work?
It really does. It really does, because not only does she doesn't just stop to interrupt to explain, but she's also cutting in music in between scene transitions. She's and she's also kind of, now this is an interesting technique, she guides the actors through the process of, she's explaining samples and looping and crossfading all these DJ techniques, and they're actually speaking live, but she's directing them as if she's recorded the things that they've said and then is playing them back, but they're doing it live. And it really works.
Tell me about the playwright. Idris Goodwin.
Yes.
Tell me about him.
Idris Goodwin is a performance poet himself and a rapper. The New York Times has praised him for what they call his, and he is not, this is not his own nomenclature, but his grown man rap, which I guess means that he doesn't just rap about dating girls. I don't know. He's married. He's in his 30s. You know, his music reflects his life.
Rapping about having a kid.
Right, right. Got to take out, you know, got to take out the trash. Got to get the car licensed. But he's also an essayist. His new collection is called These Are the Breaks. And it's a collection of essays about politics, about culture, about hip hop. And he's a playwright as well. This is his first Humana play. The play was developed at the Eugene O'Neill Playwriting Center over the last year, which is a big deal in its own right. To get your play accepted into the O'Neill Festival means that you get a fantastic director like Wendy Goldberg, who directed the Humana Festival production, attached to it. You have folks from theaters like Actors Theater going to the O'Neill Conference every year to kind of scope out what's coming next. And you get the benefit of this really amazing group of theater professionals who can help you work that early script into something that's ready to make its primetime debut at a festival like Humana.
So two plays in, how do you feel about this thing so far, this Humana Festival of New American Plays for 2012?
So far, the Humana Festival is funny. I don't know. I haven't really done a year-by-year analysis, but it doesn't feel like we always get to open with two comedies. But the comedies are different in tone, and that's the sort of thing that's the hallmark of the Humana Festival. You're not going to thematically flow easily from one play to the next. So the Verizon play was dark and bitter and sort of, you know, Orwellian almost,
right,
in its tone. And how we got on is it's a funny play, but it's also pretty sweet and has a nice, positive, lovely ending to it that that isn't tragic at all. So strong opening to the festival, funny opening to the festival. If you like to laugh, you know, both shows are good for that.
Erin, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Todd.